Hey friends, Bricky here with another episode of Adventures in Design. And before many of us were born, Steve Caballero had already started skateboarding. But back in that time period, he didn't do it to become sponsored or to become a pro because he thought that it would take him someplace glamorous. In fact, when he started skateboarding, I don't really believe any of those things were even an option. But somehow, all of those things would become true at one point in his life. Because Steve Caballero is one of the pioneers of the modern version of the sport of skateboarding, something that fundamentally changed my life and so many people that listen to this show for absolute ever. And if you know this sport, it would be very hard to not know who Steve Caballero is, or Cab, as some people lovingly call him, because he would consistently be ranked as one of the most influential skateboarders ever, with more contest wins than I could ever mention that would have just bore everybody, because the guy won a lot, or at least placed in the top 10 a lot. But I think probably the best title to share with you that Steve has earned that would give you an idea, if you don't know who he is, be like, oh, this guy is for real a legend and the real deal. Thrasher Magazine, which kind of has its finger on the pulse of not only skateboarding, but the culture that surrounds skateboarding, which is why it's one of the things I've loved my entire adulthood, because Thrasher, for many years, pointed me towards what was cool, what I could believe in, and what wasn't worth my time. This sacred scroll of skateboarding has ranked Steve as the skateboarder of the century. And I'll tell you this, friend, whenever you're called anything of the century, that means you're pretty damn good at whatever it was that you did. However, with most people that have reached this level of success, if you were to ask Steve, and I do, and I did, why he did everything, he would just tell you he did it all because it was fun. Music, art, skateboarding, Steve did all of it because it was fun. And today's world moves so fast that if you are a 10-year-old or 12-year-old kid or a 22-year-old or 32-year-old, 42-year-old, it doesn't matter your age anymore. The world moves so fast, I often wonder, does anybody today still do anything for fun? I mean, I know you watch TV for fun, but does anybody actually take on an activity, take on a challenge or a hobby, and literally baseline of just for fun? Because I feel like in today's world, there's always this little underlying thought in the back of everyone's head, me included, I'm not above the rules here. What if this goes viral? What if this becomes a thing? And when Steve Caballero became a member of the Bones Brigade, viral didn't really exist, but it did in an underground sense. Let me explain this to you. Stacy Peralta of Powell and Peralta starts shooting these videos called the Bones Brigade Video Show. There was no internet, no distribution. They didn't carry them at Blockbuster, and Blockbuster wasn't even a thing yet. However, these video cassettes would get sold to skate shops. The skate shops would let you rent the videos from them. People would double copy. You would get one from a friend, from a friend, from a friend. As you watched it, you would consistently have to mess with the tracking knob to get a clear picture of it. But in a time before there was viral, the Bones Brigade videos, I assure you, were the closest thing to being viral in an underground distribution of older kid to older kid to younger kid. These videos found their way everywhere globally in such a truly organic way. And Steve believes that this voyage that he was on, it all came from hard work. And I believe that is his perspective. But from an outsider, it does seem as if there was a cultural zeitgeist just sending Steve in whichever direction that he needed to go in. Because this life is so fascinating that when you look at it on paper, it's hard to believe that one person could do all of this. So maybe saying that everything comes from hard work is an easy way to look at it when you're living inside of this bizarre world where constantly through his life, 30 and 40-year-old men come up to him with tears in their eyes, trying to explain to Cab what it is that he means to them. Maybe you just remove that emotion and just look at it as hard work, even though the job is something as glamorous as being a professional skateboarder. Or as Steve calls it, he gets paid to get hurt. But I think there is a big lesson from today's talk. and that is work hard at any job that you take on. Because you are so much more than what you think that you are. And even the smallest, most unimportant jobs in our life have such huge and valuable lessons if we pay attention to while we're in these jobs. Sometimes, just like skateboarding, in the real world, you have to fail to succeed. Friends, I want to introduce you to one of my all-time childhood and adulthood heroes. The admiration I have for this man never stopped, even though I stopped growing. Say hello to a man who'd rather be poor and happy than rich and sad. And I don't know how much money Steve has, but I know this. He is beyond wealthy in life experience, admiration, and respect from all of his peers. It's Steve Caballero talking to you about staying humble and having gratitude on Adventures in Design 1474. I'm your host, Mark Bricky. Everybody, welcome back to our second interview today. I'm sitting next. Yeah, come on. Forty-something-year-old me is totally cool. I've interviewed 1,000-plus people with my podcast for the last 8 years. 10-year-old me just shit my pants because I'm sitting next to Steve Caballero. So let's make some noise for this legend of a man. Thanks, guys. Steve, you have one of those amazing lives that if you planned it, it would have never went the way that it did, right? I mean, you have literally since the age of what, 10, 12 years old, you have been on this adventure and many of us have been following you nearly the entire time.
Yeah, it's been a long, long ride.
Yeah.
A great path. It's been very spontaneous for sure. And I just kind of go with the flow of things, you know. When I started skateboarding in 1976, I never knew that it was going to last this long where I'm still consider myself a pro skateboarder at age 57.
But like, there's an innocence to your story in that everything that you did, you were one of the very first people to do it. So you just skated for fun because being a professional skateboarder wasn't your number one goal. Like a lot of kids growing up today, you know, they see the trajectory of the career and they put this pressure on themselves. So in many ways, because you were one of the first guys to do nearly everything that you did, you didn't have all that pressure and you could just go with the flow.
Well, I discovered skateboarding at age 12, and at age 12, you're not thinking about a career. You just want to have a good time, hang out, skate with your friends.
Yeah.
And so the career actually just came, it just happened, you know, organically.
Right.
And for me, I learned at a very young age that if I wanted to keep doing the same thing and be a part of the same, like, you know, scene or anything, that
right.
I just had to work hard and do my best, because I knew that everybody that works hard for what they do, there's rewards after it.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, I think just having a wise attitude at a very young age help me become who I am and, you know, help pave the way for skateboarding. When I first got into skateboarding, it wasn't considered a career.
Yeah.
It was more like a fad. It was more like something fun to do. It wasn't respected in any way. And so when I would tell people, I turned pro when I was 15.
Yeah.
In 1980. And when people asked me what I did for a living, I told them I was a professional skateboarder. And their next thing is like, can you make money at that?
Hey, you should try telling people you're a podcaster. Same thing.
Yeah. I mean, is there even like, so what are you going to do after skateboarding, yeah. you know? But then when the X Games came out and Tony Hawk Pro Skateboarder came out in like the late 90s, early 2000s, when people asked me what I did for a living, the next question was, oh, are you in the X Games?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so now where skateboarding has come from, it's like if someone asks, what do you do for a living? And they say, I'm a professional skateboarder. Their next thing is like, oh, are you headed for the Olympics?
Which is wild, right?
No, it's crazy.
It's so wild.
It's so cool to see where skateboarding has come from and where it is today. And when people ask me, like, what's my favorite era in skateboarding, I say right now, because I would have never dreamed that I could go to any city and find a skate park to skate for free.
Yeah.
I mean, and the Tony Hawk Foundation and everything that Hawk has done as a professional skateboarder has blessed this whole country. I just watched a documentary on skateboarding in San Diego from the 50s to now, and it's amazing where it's come from with all the contributions of everybody. And Hawk has really put back into skateboarding like no other skateboarder ever has.
I think skateboarding is one of those things that if you fully get into it, you understand how important it is in your development as a person, because, you know, I tried team sports like a lot of young kids do, but when you skateboard and it's just you against you and all of that falls away, you're building your fundamental like personality. And it's been awesome to see so many of these pros that have lived good lives from it give back to the scene. And it is wild now. I remember being a kid and looking out the window to find like a drainage ditch. And now as an adult, I drive and look out the window and I see skate parks. And the evolution of that has just been so crazy. But for you, you've been one of those people, though, that going back to when you were 12, I guarantee you there are 12-year-old kids right now that are going to focus their board in half because they don't feel like they're going to go pro. And there's like an innocence to like the way that you were brought up because it wasn't possible. But then the cool factor was is that you've always been a renaissance man. Like, you were great at skateboarding. We all loved you for that. And then we found out, yo, this guy's in a band too. And so you've always been doing double duty. What was it like back in the day trying to find time to go do gigs when that skate career was just absolutely on fire? I mean, you guys were touring the world.
Well, I kind of attacked music the same way I attacked skateboarding. I just did it for fun. And, you know, skateboarders have this creative nature.
Yes.
Inside them. And you just always kind of want to try to express yourself, whether it's on a skateboard, whether it's playing in a band, or whether it's drawing with a paintbrush or pencil. We just always have this need to express ourselves. And so when I wasn't on my skateboard, I was either playing guitar in my room all by myself, learning punk rock songs. And I started a punk band in 1982. And I wanted to play guitar, but it was so difficult to learn because of the way you hold your fingers.
Yeah.
So I picked up a bass because that was a lot easier, just one finger. And I remember catching myself in the studio with my band, and I've only been playing for like 6 months, and we were recording our own record. You know, so skateboarding, punk rock have always been like the kind of the DIY attitude of like, let's make a record, you know,
yeah.
and not wait for some big company to come do it for us. So, and that's what our attitude has been. And so skateboarding and punk rock has always gone hand in hand in that way. And especially with art, you know, as well. And you start out doing things for fun and you work hard and you become successful at it. And then you reap the benefits of all your hard work.
Yeah.
And what I've learned through skateboarding, you learn to fail to succeed, because skateboarding is so difficult. You just can't do an ollie. You have to keep doing till you learn it. You just can't do a kickflip. You just can't learn how to drop in. You have to fall and fail a lot before you can be successful. So I took that attitude with everything that I've had in my life, and I've just learned and knew ahead of time that if I was going to be good at anything, I had to fail at it first before I could be successful.
And part of that failure, quote-unquote failure, which is actually the learning process, yes. is
The first time you drop in and you're like, holy shit, I'm on the other side. Like, it's the greatest feeling in the world, right? And that is the greatest reward for the risk that you take for everything. For someone like yourself that was doing music just for fun, let's talk about music for a minute, because there's playing in the garage or playing in the basement, there's playing shows, but the first time you hear yourself in the studio, it's like a punch in the gut. You're like, oh God, I sound like shit.
It's
like
a reality check for sure.
I mean, it's really the moment where it becomes real and you're like, oh my God, like this is what it sounds like. But once again, I'm sure like when you started seeing yourself in all the different videos, you know, it starts to, does it feel real to you when you're living through all of this? Like, when you see the records come out, when you see the videos get released, did it change your view of how it was happening? Or were you still able to just be like, I do it for fun because it is fun?
Well, first and foremost, I do everything for fun. You know, I enjoy what I do. And I feel like if you don't enjoy what you do or your job, you should just quit, regardless what the money is. Because in the end, are you really stoked to be rich but sad at the same time?
Right.
So I'd rather be poor and happy than rich and sad.
Hey friends, I want to make you aware of my friends over at GarmCompany.com. This is a great place to go get all the different types of digital tools that'll make your creative process go faster. We've done all the hard work. We've kicked all the tires on these different design techniques, so you don't have to. So you can just do whatever is authentically you. But if you need to add some textures to your project, or you're looking for a perfect like paper texture to make it look more warm and less digital, head over to the website and get Print Street Texture Pack Volume 2 with 26 seamless vector textures. Or if you're working on a project and you're just like, I don't know, I need a color pattern to really sell this. I need a palette that's going to just speak to people. Try out our brand new Colorama 80s edition with color palettes from Jason Edmonston and Sarah Deck, with more than 60 different color palettes inspired by 80s horror movies and 80s comic books, with a little help from Jason Edmonston and Sarah Deck, and included with videos of each of them explaining their masterful use of their own personal color theories. That's just two products that'll help you get going to where you need to go faster. This way you don't have to spend all day finding the perfect color scheme or figuring out how to get that texture to work or find the brush that you need to sell that idea. We've already created the tools so you can focus on creating the art. GarmCompany.com, coupon code site-wide AID. You're always going to take 20% off by listening to this show and using the coupon code AID. What do you say we get back to Gary Baseman back at DesignerCon 2021? And I'll see you there in 2022.
Can I ask you about that real quick? Because knowing who you are and your status, there had to have been people that were like, hey man, we need to sell more boards, or we need to push new shoes. Like, how did you silence out those voices that try to get you to focus on the numbers? Because a guy of your talent and your earning potential, it brings out people that try to push you to not see the fun all the time and turn it into a business. Like, how did you stay resilient to that and just be like, I don't want to do that, I want to just keep it fun? Because that's a skill set.
You know, I never really dealt with companies that were that pushy.
Yeah.
You know, if I've worked for a company, it wasn't really monetarial based, where like, hey, you know, we pay you, so you need to do your job so we can make money. And I already knew in the back of my mind that when I've got skateboards for free, that I was sponsored, that they were using me to push their product. So I knew that I already had a job, even as an amateur, that I need to do my job well, or I won't get these free skateboards, or I won't get to travel all over the world. So I learned that attitude of like, just doing the best job you can, you know, and you're going to keep your job. So I always say to myself, if I ever worked at McDonald's, I'd be the best fryer of French fries. You know what I mean? Yeah. I try to work my way up to the top. I don't care what job it is. You do the best job you can, and no one can argue with that.
So when you're a young man and you're making money and you had an immense amount of popularity as the Bones Brigade videos start going out, who in your family or friend group kept you this level-headed? Because you've had an insane work discipline your whole life, But did you have anybody that kept you sane? Because you always felt like the most approachable, level-headed dude. And we've seen a lot of people get eaten up with ego in all of the different industries that you've touched. Like, was there a mentor that you had that helps you keep it level?
Not really necessarily, but what I did know growing up, I was a pretty shy kid growing up, you know, so I didn't really talk much. I just let my actions speak for myself. But I also found that that was very negative as well, and people get a wrong impression when you're shy.
Sure.
So even if you're a shy person, you don't want to talk to anybody, you come up stuck up, and you come off like, oh, he's too cool for me. So, like, I'd just be the shy dude, like, don't want to talk to one, and super scared, and then I'd hear all these people like, oh, yeah, he's a jerk. He didn't even notice me. He didn't even talk to me. So I was like, oh, okay, so I got to actually step out of my comfort zone and be social.
Yeah.
I don't want to, but I know that that's going to go a long way and that's going to touch people's lives. And I remember, I always tell the story, but I have a great friend named Solomon Agaw.
Yeah.
He owns Pizzanista. He used to ride for Pal Skateboards in the late 80s. I remember going to a skate park with him one day, and we showed up to the pool, and he went out of his way to introduce himself to everybody who was there. And I looked at that, and I'm like, wow, I need to do that. Because, for one, these guys who look up to me are scared to talk to me.
Right.
So if I just break the ice and introduce myself and say hello, they're going to remember that. So I try to do that. I try to, trying to be a good person and trying to be a good human, I try to recognize people. Because that's what everybody wants, is to be recognized for something, and they want to be noticed. So if you can just go out there and do that for them, it goes a long way. So like any kind of like famous musician or actor, I mean, even for myself, they're not very approachable because you think they already have this attitude like I'm up here and you're down here. And that's how people look at me, you know, and I want to look at them right straight in the eyes like we're the same person. We have the same struggles. What's up, Kevin? We have the same problems, you know? So I try not to put people on pedestals, and I don't like people to put me on a pedestal, because I know that those same people who lift me up, if I do something bad, they're gonna knock me down just super quick. So I have to really, really be careful what I say, what I do, because I know people are so willing to look at something negative about me. And even when I'm posting on Instagram, I have to really make sure I'm typing the right thing and saying the right thing, because they'll point out something negative.
Yes, they will.
They'll find anything negative.
100%.
And I've learned a hard lesson that when you're writing an email and you're doing an apology, you got to make it completely positive, because it can be like lifting someone up, and then you just add one little tiny negative thing, and they just focus on this one little negative thing, and all this good stuff that you wrote just gets washed out the door.
I love your attitude of trying to put everybody at the same level, because not only does that make people feel more invited by you, but it lowers probably the expectations or burden that you feel, because, I mean, your whole life now is 30, 40-year-old men saying, you're my hero, you changed my world. And don't worry, that's coming, okay? So you're not free from that today. But, like, I understand that you feel like you owe something to people when they tell you this, and they're staring at you, and they're excited to meet you. So I love the idea of bringing them all to one level and being level-headed. And, I mean, that's a skill set all inside of its own. When you guys started doing the videos, and it went from just being photos in Thrasher magazine to these videos that got distributed all around the country and the world, how was that first level, though, of dealing with fame as a shy guy? Like, did it mess with you for a while? Did you have to learn this skill set? I mean, because what you just said was incredibly, like, Buddhist and, like, very insightful. Has that always been in your personality, or was that something you had to work toward?
I don't know. Like I said, I observe things. I observe people, and I see the reaction and how people represent themselves or what they're doing, and then I kind of look at the results, and that's how I kind of determine how I live my life, you know, and probably why I stayed off hard drugs, because those were offered to me
sure
a lot through friends and peers throughout the 80s, and it was very easy to try something that I knew was harmful for me. So yeah. What kept me away from going down that path was fear. Fear of enjoying something so much that it was going to affect my life. Instead of being curious and trying all these crazy drugs and doing all these things, I was always afraid, and I always told myself, well, I don't want to try that, because if I fall in love with it, then what happens?
Yeah.
Then that becomes part of my life. I become addicted to it, so I never tried all these crazy things.
Do you have an addictive personality? And is
very addictive personality.
Because I'm always fascinated when I meet people that don't know what they want to do, because, and I'm assuming you're in the same boat, I would love to live my life 1,000 times and be a different person all 1,000 times. But we only get one shot, Steve. So that's why we end up being a pro skateboarder, in a band, doing artwork. Like, all the different things you do to me says, this is a guy that has a lust for life and just wants to fit it all in.
Well, my life changes every single day.
Yeah.
So every day, I'm trying to be different in a good way. You know, try to get rid of all of the negative things in my life. I learned a lot about trying to not waste time with things that aren't beneficial for you. And I heard it once said, and I try to teach this to my kids. I heard this from a pastor before. He says, it's better to build a boy up than to repair a man. So when you're bringing up kids, make sure you're doing it right, because yeah. You don't want to fix things that when they're older, it's harder to fix.
Yeah.
You know, so there's been a lot of things growing up that I've had to change about my life and about who I am and what I do just through experience.
Yeah.
You know, so like I said, I'm a chess player, so I like to analyze, and I feel like chess is a great game to learn, because you can add that to life of how you make your moves and how they end up. You know, everything that we do in life results. It's either a positive result or a negative result. So you have to really plan very well strategically when you're making your moves every single day. So that could be a decision. That could be anything that you have in your life, the people you hang out with, the people you associate with. I don't associate with negativity. I mean, I left Facebook like 2 years ago because it's just completely negative.
Me too.
You know, I don't want that part of my life.
Yeah.
You know, people who I've made friends with that are just downers and just want to drain you, you know, I get rid of those people, because, I mean, you can only be comfort so much until you start becoming bummed out yourself with them.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's like, and a lot of people just like to vent, but they don't like to hear the advice.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I don't want to be that guy that's just like, I'm just going to just keep pounding this guy with all my problems. You know, I'd rather just get rid of that person.
So when you're at your age and you start a new band with Urethane, what's the goal for a project like that? Is it fun to be with your friends and to play music and to get together? Like, it's just, I'm so, I admire your life that you just keep going and you keep adding things on. And as somebody who's dealing with my own mortality, you being a little bit further up the road, it's like, you can just keep doing new things and getting, you know, you're never too late to start a new band with your buds. You're never too late to keep doing things. So with Urethane, like, does it feel good to be back in a van or, you know, in a basement and hanging out, playing music with your friends again?
No, it's great to be creative and to have this fresh start with people that I've, you know, never played music with. And people are super scared to try new things.
Yes.
And to, you know, they feel like, you know, this is just my life. This is the road that I chose for myself. I'm just stuck here. But you got to believe in yourself that you're capable of more things that you will ever know. 10 years from now, I may discover something I'm really good at. You know what I mean? I don't know yet.
Wouldn't it be nice to see Steve discover something that he's really good at finally? I mean, wouldn't that make everybody here happy?
Finally. No, but I just want to share my experience with everybody, and I want to tell everybody in this room that you're more than you think you are. So believe in yourself, even though there's people doubting you and people pushing negative thoughts in you, saying like, you can't do that. You'll never be good at that. Don't let those people bring you down, and don't let fear get in the way with it, because I feel that fear is a huge thing that keeps people living their full potential in life.
And I think, too, if you actually stop and take what you're afraid of and break it down and really work through, like, well, what's the worst case scenario? It's normally not that bad. You know, like, if you really sort of figure out what you're afraid of, I normally find the permission to just push through and keep going. And after interviewing hundreds of people, that seems to be the trend for successful people. That, like, fear is almost like, if I'm scared to do it, probably means I'm kind of heading in the right direction.
Rejection is probably the worst thing that anybody wants to experience.
Sure.
And I feel that we all suffer from that fear of rejection. So that'll keep you from moving forward and doing the things you really want to do. So once you get past that and not worry about what people think, you're able to focus on, you know, what you're doing. And eventually, like I said, with all the hard work and the time you put into things, eventually you become successful. It just happens. And I always have this argument with people, and I'll argue this to the day I die, but I don't believe in natural talent.
Really?
Nope.
You don't believe that you were gifted to be the skateboarder of the century?
And the reason why I say that is because I know how hard I work for the things that I do. People aren't in my body, so they don't know what I'm thinking 24/7.
Yeah.
They don't know what I'm thinking about right before I go to sleep, right before I wake up, all during the day, while I'm driving. I mean, my mind is constantly going. Like, I can, like, multitask. You know what I mean?
Don't you love driving and thinking? Like, there's something so meditative. Like, half of your body's keeping you alive, which opens up the other half of the body to dream about what you want to do with that life. Like, I find driving to be the most therapeutic thing where so many great moments of inspiration come from.
Well, I've been driving my car sometimes and thinking about stuff, and I'm like, how did I just get home right now? I don't even remember what turn I went on.
Yeah.
Because you're so focused on what you're thinking about that you're just at home now. I'm like, oh my goodness, like,
so
how did I not crash?
You just show up, you're like, oh, muscle memory.
Hey friends, I hope you have enjoyed part one of today's episode with Steve Caballero, a conversation that I think, to sum it up with one of Steve's quotes, it's better to build a boy than repair a man. And I think that all of us would like to think that we got the sort of essentials in our being built from our role models, our parents, you know, the older kids at the skate park, the older kids in the band, the people that worked at the job when you first got there. But there is a lot of repair that I think that we all want to do along the way. Coming up in part two, we talked about how one thing leads to another when you're a yes man, and how Steve has always tried to say yes to opportunities. But the downside of that is there's only so much time to fit in so many of these opportunities. And we talk about Steve's love of art, but his total disdain for surfing. And not because surfing's a bad sport, it's the people that do it and how uninviting they are. How it ruins the sport for Steve. How art has taught Steve he's capable of things that he never knew that he would be able to do. And how skateboarding can mean so many different things to so many different people. And lastly, how Steve became a man of faith. I'm never one to back away from listening to somebody talk about their journeys in life. And if that means religion, I'm all ears. Even though I'm not a participant, I'm all ears because I love hearing how people continue to grow, continue to evolve beyond these jobs and titles that we associate with them. It's always so fascinating to learn the people behind these big legendary myths that we make them into. We've got 25 more minutes of conversation with Steve Caballero coming up in part two for members of the Circle of Trust. If you're enjoying today's conversation, we have over 1,400 episodes waiting for you in our archives, and many of those involve artists and designers that have done graphics for some of the skate decks that you've probably seen over the years, as well as skateboarding legends Ed Templeton, Jim Phillips, Larry Balma of Tracker Trucks, Jim Gray, and Michael Seaman of Thrasher Magazine. What do you say? We could start it with 25 more minutes of Steve Caballero coming out right now for members of the Circle of Trust, available at AID.network.
Being a professional athlete, there's something that's so fascinating. Like, you know, you've been illustrating your whole life, and we're going to talk about your art career, and there's no expiration on that fun. But when you're a professional athlete, your body is working against you. And I cracked up laughing this morning looking at your Instagram. You said, you know, when I hit 50, they told me that 40 is the new 50 and 50 is the new 60. And you're like, I don't care. The older I get, 9 o'clock is the new midnight. And I felt that because I was in my hotel by 10 last night being like, I'm done. I'm spent. Can you remember that moment in life where all of a sudden you're like, this isn't participating anymore? Do you remember the moment where like age finally caught up with a guy that doesn't seem to age?
Well, I'm 57 now. And I remember when I turned 35, I was skating a vert contest and I went to grab a stale fish and I could barely grab my board and felt something right here in my gut. And I'm like, oh my goodness, it's starting to happen. Like, I'm not limber anymore. I'm getting fat. And so did I do anything about it? No, I'm still not very limber. But you know, it kind of happens slowly. Like, when you're a kid, you get hurt, maybe an hour or two, you feel okay. The older you get, it's like, now it's taking a day to heal. The older you get, oh, it's taking a week to heal. Now it's taking a month to heal. So it gets a little bit more scarier to get hurt. So I have a lot more fear now as a,
yeah,
you know, old man. I hurt this ankle like probably 3 years ago, and it hurts. Still hurts. And this is before I broke my femur 2 years ago and before I broke this ankle a year ago. Yeah, it just, you know, you wake up with a sore back or you know, I'm limping all the time. And that's just being a professional athlete. You get hurt. It's just part of being, it's part of my job. I get paid to get hurt.
When you first felt that pinch when you're doing the stale fish, was there something in your mind that's like, I need to diversify my career? Were you worried about losing this thing that had been your identity your entire age as a young man?
No, I just knew that I'd have to do something different or work harder to be where I'm at.
Yeah.
And so would I love to be skating like I was in the 80s? Of course I would, but I just have to realize I'm this old. I only got what I got, you know? So if I put the work in, I feel like I will be successful with that. And I do so many things that I have to pick and choose what I'm good at or want to spend time. I made a post the other day that said, it's really weird to be the same age as old people. I just thought that was funny because in my mind, I'm still in my 20s.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's how I think. So, and I think skateboarding and music and art has really kept me immature in that way, is having a young mind and being like, I don't want to ever get old. I just want to keep doing the same things I'm doing. So, you know, and that's why I do what I do, because I want to show people, like I said, you're not stuck. You can still develop a new skill. You don't even know what you're good at yet. Like, you don't even know yourself.
And you still, you know, tell that to yourself.
Still to this day, like I said, I'll probably, in 5-10 years, I'll discover something new that I never thought I was good at.
So when you have all the balancing act that is your life, how do you figure out where to put your attention? Like, how do you figure out it's time to pull off a skateboard and lean on music for a while? Or, I mean, because to me, art seems like it's the one that could fill all the gaps, right? Because art is complete freedom. You just need you and your tools. Skateboarding requires a couple of things. The band requires three other dudes, which is like being in a marriage with them. It seems like the art is the thing you could pull out of your back pocket to fill up any gap. But how do you figure out what the next thing you should be doing is?
Well, probably, like, if you follow my Instagram page and you're seeing a lot of artwork come out, it's probably because I'm hurt. So that's probably because then I'm not skateboarding, I'm not mountain biking, I'm not riding a dirt bike because I can't, because I'm hurt. So the art comes out. I kind of like try to balance everything, you know. I'm also a parent too, so I got to juggle kids. I have two little ones that I take care of every other week, so that takes time away from the things that I want to do. You know, I have to be a responsible dad and do my job as a good parent. That has had an effect on my life as far as being a family man and a husband twice. You know, so I guess I haven't been a very good husband because I've been divorced twice, but I do my best, you know, and juggle my career and being a family man at the same time. It's not an easy thing, and some people get so caught up in their work that they've never wanted to be a family man.
Right.
They're too afraid to have kids because they don't want to ruin their career. And I see a lot of couples that get married will never have kids because they were too afraid to mess up their profession. And they felt like, well, we don't make enough money to have a kid.
Steve, are you interviewing me now? Because you just read my mind on those last two categories.
I'm just happy that I got to experience being a dad and a husband, because most people won't ever experience that. You know?
Well, in a life where you've done so many interesting things, do you feel like a legend? Like, do you feel the legacy of what you've done? Because to so many people, you are. Or does it just feel like that's just the way that it went?
Well, I've never heard the word legend
tossed
around so much until I went to Australia, mate. And everyone says, oh, mate, you're a legend, mate. You're a legend. I'm like, okay. But, yeah, I mean, it's a good title to have, I guess. I mean, like I said, I'm just a normal person. I'm just like you guys. I have the same struggles. I have the same temptations.